Welcome to the Boys and Girls Haven Happenings podcast, featuring conversations and stories designed to equip, mobilize, and encourage our community to support children and young adults in foster care. Sit back, relax, and enjoy this episode of Haven Happenings. Hey there, folks. Nick Brewer here. I am the marketing and design manager at Boys and Girls Haven. I also edit the Haven Happenings podcast. Late last week, I had the opportunity to sit down with a couple of my coworkers.
All right, just tell me if I need to get closer or further away or talk louder.
The first was Josh Swetnam.
Hi, I'm Josh Swetnam.
He's a mental health professional.
I'm the director of the Haven Family Counseling Program here at Boys and Girls Haven.
He has more than 25 years of experience in foster care, both as a parent.
My wife, Jody, and I are the really lucky parents of two beautiful children, Azaria, who's age 7, Amani, who's 13. They both were children in the foster care system. We adopted them. Both have been with us since they were little.
And as a clinician?
Also working in child welfare for about 25 years now, have had a lot of experience working with foster and adoptive parents through Boys and Girls Haven and some other places where we've worked. So,
hello, I'm Ebony Dixon.
The second coworker was Ebony Dixon. She's also a mental health professional.
I'm the therapist here at Boys and Girls Haven.
Ebony's been at Boys and Girls Haven for more than 5 years.
I currently work with Salt River Trail Region and also do intensive in-home.
This conversation between Josh and Ebony lasts about 30 minutes. It dives into the meaningfulness of hair and what it means for foster parents to be proactive about educating themselves on their child's culture. You can listen to more episodes or learn more about our foster care, adoption, and mental health services by visiting us online at boysandgirlshaven.org.
I feel like today's hair is such a big deal that they try to mimic all the celebrities and like their different hairstyles. So I also see it with girls getting like sew-ins from different races and different cultures. Mm-hmm. And I know that it's just different because the hair is sometimes a lot finer or not as coarse where it's able to hold in that weave. And so it's a struggle, but the kids, that's what they want because that's what they see, you know, so very interesting.
Right, because that's what the celebrities do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think celebrity and just, you know, music and actors and basically anybody who's popular in the culture, that drives a lot of what the kids want to see, what the kids want to do with their hair.
Definitely.
And I think that's kind of universal, mm-hmm. whether a kid's in foster care or not, you know. And I guess it's always been that way, where kids want to be like their heroes, like the celebrities.
Yeah.
But that can get kind of interesting when we talk about, you know, kind of a Eurocentric culture.
Yep.
And that's, you know, that's kind of been an issue throughout our country's history. You know, if the supposed norm is kind of a white standard of beauty,
mm-hmm.
then you can have children who are, you know, African-American or, you know, from other racial backgrounds who want to aspire to kind of a white standard of beauty. I think that's something that we all have to kind of be aware of.
Yeah.
So have you ever worked with youth who maybe wanted something that was unrealistic or maybe even had some self-esteem issues?
Definitely.
Because
I have. And you know, it's so funny. So I'm coming from a background of also just not only being an African-American female, but I worked in foster care for 3 years. And then I did like, I worked at the Brook in like a residential setting, a hospital setting for 3 years. And I would tell you, it was so mind-boggling that you would see so many kids, girls would try to change their hair. I would see it with girls who are biracial. They will literally try to fry their hair because they wanted their hair straight like their mom's. And so just basically giving them the education piece around, hey, your hair may not look this type of way. But on other hand, I remember those curls would be beautiful. So I would try to get them to embrace like, hey, your curls, you know, just you just need water. You just need to put a little bit of this in there and having your curls pop. But big hair was not cool for kids, mm-hmm. right? So it's like that flat, that straight. And they literally were frying their hair. So yes, I've seen that a lot.
Yeah, there's a long history of hair straightening.
Yes.
You know, in this country, and using a lot of chemicals, artificial things to try mm-hmm. to get hair straightened.
Yeah.
So don't a lot of a lot of kids damage their hair that way.
Yes. Their hair, I promise you, was so damaged, very broke off, very kind of really brittle. And it was really hard for them to not process or understand why their hair couldn't get mm-hmm. the way that their mom's hair was, or vice versa, you know. So I think it was just so hard for them girls to understand that.
Yeah. So it seems like, you know, a big piece of it is not being able to fully appreciate or love who you are, you know, that, you know, if your hair is naturally curly, being able to embrace that, you know, and love your hair. There's actually a book, and then it became, or it was actually an animated short, and it became a book called Hair Love. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've seen this. I think it won like the Oscar for best animated short, but it was about a father trying to help his daughter, his African-American daughter, do her hair as they went to see their mom in the hospital. But I've seen a lot more in the culture kind of geared towards helping young women and young men appreciate their hair and be who they are, you know, kind of natural hair. You know, I feel like natural hair has become kind of more popular, more accepted. What do you think?
Oh, I promise you 100% more acceptance. I even think about just me personally. In 2006, when kind of went to college, natural hair was just not just what it was, right? So we wore our hair in like weaves and styles and, you know, those type of things. But if you wore your hair natural, it was like, oh, what's going on with you? What's wrong? And I hate to say it that way, but I do think today's society embraces that so much more. I know with me in my hair journey, I've actually now been natural for the last 5 years, and it is a process. But I've gained so much knowledge around it, and so much more, just my hair is so much healthier. And I never knew that.
Yeah.
And so I'm an adult who's able to say that. So I just couldn't imagine a kid nowadays. So now I kind of use my experience and when working in this population, helping out our families. Because the first thing I feel like the families just has to be aware of is just realizing that there is a difference. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes that's kind of hard to accept at first because it's like, there's no difference, right? I used to work with foster families who would say to me, oh, no, it's not a big deal. And I was like, oh, no, but it is, you know. And you will see with young women, when their hair is different, their self-esteem is different. Mm-hmm. They act different. Even me. I can honestly say that when my hair is done, I promise you I can be a whole different person. And it's just now just embracing that and realizing that. And it's realizing that it's not a bad thing. Because I think in the past that we probably used to think that's so shallow. That's so, you know, and it's not.
Yeah.
It's a big deal.
Well, and I'm thinking about even some youth that you and I both know, youth that you've worked with, where getting your hair done is symbolic of so much more, mm-hmm. you know, that I'm accepted within this family, that somebody cares enough to take care of my hair, that take the time to treat me like everybody else in the family. So if, and thinking about kids in foster care, that can say a lot if, say, the biological members of the family get the hair done, but then the foster child doesn't.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It says a lot about your place in the family.
It does.
And on the opposite side, if you're treated like everybody else and you get all the same time, attention, money put into your hair care, that says a lot about where you stand.
Yeah.
I mean, what do you think?
No, I definitely think that you definitely hit on something. And one thing I will say is also just realizing that it does take a lot of time. It does take a lot of patience and a lot of money sometimes to care for your hair properly. And yeah, caregivers, parents, they do need to be aware of that. And when they do show that to a kid, it's so much more than just getting your hair done, right? It's showing me that, hey, you are also wanting me to be just like you, or accepted, or, you know, part of the family. And so I think that that is just so crucial to understand and to know.
I've been around in this field for a while. And I remember when I first got into social work, you know, as a career, you know, my perspective was pretty narrow. I didn't know what I didn't know. But when I started working in foster care, you know, many, many years ago, I remember one family that I worked with, it kind of opened my eyes because a foster mother wanted to call CPS, Child Protective Services, mm-hmm. on another foster parent for not taking care of a child's hair.
Yeah.
I mean, this child, that her hair was falling out. It hadn't been combed and taken care of. And, you know, just having those conversations, it really opened my eyes to just how important it is, particularly for African-American children, to have your hair taken care of so that it's healthy, and that and also that you can have, you know, higher self-esteem. So, yeah, just her, this foster parent saying, I'm going to call CPS on that mother. It told me just how serious and how important it was. And, that kind of opened my eyes, and I could, learn more and more. But that experience really stands out to me.
Yeah. And I will tell you, it is. It just goes with overall health and well-being nowadays, right? Yeah. It's like when we think about like self-care, that's one thing that's super important. And so I see why she was so upset, So kudos to her. Did we need to maybe contact CPS? I'm not sure. But I will say it definitely should have been a conversation.
Yeah,
and so,
absolutely.
Yeah, I think that actually was really brave of her to do that.
Yeah. And it, I think it speaks to either nurturing or neglect.
Yeah.
And it's symbolic of something deeper, and you can say that about a lot of things, mm-hmm. Here at Boys and Girls Haven, since we do work with children in foster care, thinking about, are we taking care of all these children's needs? Are we really, and again, are we treating them as family?
Yeah.
Because to me, that's a lot of what it boils down to. Will we treat these children like they're our own?
Yep.
Even if we're fostering and haven't adopted and they're not our biological kids, are we going to take care of them?
Yeah.
And I think when you're a foster or adoptive parent, that's a big piece.
Yeah.
Is to think about how do you treat them as your own, but also how do you educate yourself to make sure that you're meeting their needs?
Yes.
So I'm an adoptive parent of two African-American children.
Okay.
They're 7 and 13, but they've both been with us, with me and my wife, since they were babies.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to tell you that as a white person, I had no idea how complex and how multi-layered it is to take care of African-American hair. I grew up in kind of a rural setting, all white family, and I had no concept.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been an education for me and my wife.
Yeah.
The number of products, the expense, the work that goes into taking care of hair. And it's been a journey for us, and we've made a lot of mistakes along the way.
And you know what I think is so important to highlight what you just said, that this has been a journey. And I don't know if you probably realize it, but your kids will probably in the future really appreciate that. They might not understand now just because they're kids, but appreciate just the process of you guys just trying to do that. So I would say, I think back in like when you were taking your like classes, is that something that they highlight in there? Or is that something you feel like that's where we need to kind of start our goal?
Not nearly enough.
Okay.
So we, with my daughter, we were foster parents for DCBS, Kentucky's Child Welfare System. So we were actually partnered up with the entity that we work with day in and day out.
Yeah.
Like so many other foster parents. And I would say the training was good. There was a lot we got out of it, even for two people who've worked in social services, but they didn't cover the issues of transracial fostering and adoption enough. And they didn't touch on hair enough.
Yeah.
They mentioned it, but I think there's a need, especially in transracial foster homes, to provide more support and education.
Yeah.
And a part of that, and again, I'm kind of drawn from my own experience, is helping get past maybe the nervousness or apprehension about reaching out across the racial lines.
Yep.
I remember, I'll never forget the first time I took my son to a black barbershop.
Mm-hmm.
We went to like the little kid sports clips or whatever when he was a baby, where all babies get their haircut. But when he was old enough to really need a good fade, a good hairstyle, we started going to black barbershops. And I remember that it wasn't just my experience walking in and being the only white person, but also for him.
Yeah.
He could tell it was an interesting experience for him too.
Yeah.
Because he could, feel the contrast of being with me,
mm-hmm.
but also being in a barbershop full of people that look like him. And it was a wonderful experience.
Oh,
and we went back time and time again, and we kind of became regulars, and we all knew each other by first name. And it was a great experience. But just getting in the door was the first most important part, because, you have to, I think if you're like a white foster adoptive parent caring for African-American children, you have to have the courage to kind of walk across that threshold. You have to push yourself a little bit out of your comfort zone, And I know my wife had a similar experience going into salons with our daughter, because at some point she just didn't have the skills or knowledge to really give her the hairstyles that yep. would, you know, make her look her best.
Yes.
You know, braids and twists and beads and, you know, so she had to go and get help. But, yeah. if you don't reach out,
yep.
then you're not going to be able to take care of your child as much as to the best of your ability. So yeah. that's one thing I would say to white foster parents, maybe fostering children of a different race, is, you know, reach out.
Yeah.
Get support. Talk to somebody who knows.
Yeah.
You know, step outside of your comfort zone, because I think that's only going to benefit your child.
Definitely. And you know what I think about that, which is huge, is stepping outside of your comfort zone. Me just being an African-American female, I have to do that a lot in life.
Absolutely.
And I think about it sometimes, it's now I don't want to say tables are turning, but I think it's coming to realization that, you know, Caucasians, you know, you guys are also stepping outside the comfort zone. And Josh, I think it's just incredible that you are able to just highlight that and recognize that. And, you know, there's good people in all, you know, culture and communities and those type of things. And I'm glad you had a great experience in the salon, because I will tell you, the salon is such a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
So I think about it, there's movies nowadays, you know, barbershop and their salons. It's such a family atmosphere that after a while, I promise you, you'll be in these, you know, in each other's life for years on out in times. I still remember going to the salon when I was 16, and I still am connected with that hair salon hairstylist, to this day. So it's such a big deal.
And does that also kind of speak to how hair is not just hair?
Yeah.
In the African American community, it's also part of culture.
It is.
And relationships.
Yep. A positive relationship building. I promise you, during the salon, you'll go in there. I don't care what mood you're in. You know, we have great conversations. You might have like dinner in there. You know, snacks is also in there. So I think it's just a good time of just coming in. And then you also, when you are building these rapport and, you know, different conversation with people, you can like ask questions that you probably wouldn't ask in a normal setting.
Right.
And so I really love it. It's kind of like a safe setting, a safe spot for people. So I really enjoy that about the salons.
But, you know, LeBron James has like a production company, you know, does movies and TV shows. But one of them, I think, is called The Shop.
Mm.
And it really does kind of celebrate that barbershop culture.
Yeah.
Which, you know, as I understand it, and again, it's just as I've learned over the past, you know, 13, 14 years, you know, the barbershop, again, it's not just about getting a good haircut.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a place, it's a safe space.
It is.
It's a safe space to learn, to ask those questions, like you said,
yeah.
To be among people who kind of get the experience. And
yeah.
so, again, I think as foster adoptive parents, we have to be aware of all the, it's kind of multidimensional, you know,
yeah.
what's culturally important, you know, and how do we embrace those elements so the children feel supported?
Yeah. And I think just kind of going back to what you're saying, you know, I think during this time, just letting foster parents know that there is so much education piece out there. I know the internet right now, we know it can be a little, you know, a little biased at times, but I will say that's your first go-to sometimes. Mm-hmm. You know, going on the internet, YouTube have great videos of how to do your hair, how to properly, you know, get your hair growing, being healthy, how to treat different types of hair. I want to highlight that too. Just because you have a kid of a certain race doesn't mean that their hair is all one texture. There's so many different textures out there. So learning the different texture of your kid's hair, you know, individualizing it. And just literally, we call it like tender love and care.
Mm-hmm.
Giving that hair tender love and care is just like plants. It's just like, you know, us as humans, we need that to grow. We need that to flourish. And I just think that is really awesome.
You know, it reminds me of something that I also think we have to be aware of. Or think about when we're working with children in foster care, or children who have been adopted, is, you know, to kind of push back against this notion that there is no difference.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you'll hear people say something like, "I don't see color.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter to me."
Yeah.
It's a nice goal, but the truth is, to be culturally competent and culturally humble, we really do need to see and embrace those differences and appreciate them. So I think a mistake that I've seen some foster parents make is to kind of take that approach of we're all the same and it's no different.
Yeah.
But a lot of children don't feel like they're being heard or seen mm-hmm. with that approach. So I would really advocate for taking a different approach, embrace the differences, and then educate yourself.
Yeah.
Get the experience so that your children can be even more supported. And again, like what we're talking about, that includes like go to the barbershop, go to the salon, talk to somebody who knows how to do hair.
Yeah.
Have them educate you.
Yeah.
I know my wife has on multiple occasions over the years paid professional stylists to come to the home and teach her like hand over hand. Here's how you braid. Here's how you twist. Here's how you use this conditioner or this oil or, you know, but you got to reach out to get that, you know, to get that knowledge, gain that knowledge.
You definitely do. And I will say, I promise you, the kids it will appreciate that so much. And then just going to school, because what we don't see on the flip side is the kids are the ones who's going to school. And we all know the kids are really cruel out here. And they will say things mean and those things. And a lot of times if your kid is brought in that environment of, you know, like loving and peace, they may not see the difference in their hair. Mm-hmm. But then when they go out in the world, they're going to see that difference. Okay.
And Ebony, so. Do you think that's kind of compounded with, you know, when they walk through the school doors, a lot of those kids also know they may not be with their biological family.
Yeah.
They might be in a foster adoptive home. So they already may feel different.
Yep.
So would that be compounded if their hair also isn't kind of looking
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. And that's why I feel like this, having those open conversations, you know, not steer away from them. I even know too, culturally, a lot of times in African-American culture, it was one of those, hey, you're a kid, so you need to kind of stay in a child's place. But no, now we are learning that, no, it's okay to be more open, right? Age-appropriate conversations, right? But having that conversation about your hair. I educate my clients about my hair a lot. They have a lot of questions, and I do. Cross-cultures, you know, they'll come and ask me, can I touch your hair? And I will let them know, hey, when you do get into other environments, they may not be okay to do, but here you can do that, and that's okay. And they are amazed and are like, okay. So it's just about just having an open, honest conversation with them. I think is just key, because again, the kids are the ones who's out here in the world.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, I love what you said about them being curious and then asking.
Yeah.
Because being curious and asking permission are two really key pieces, I think.
Yeah.
You know, to want to learn more, but to also not assume that you have a right to touch someone's hair or assume anything. And that's, you know, we talk about white privilege. That's kind of part of it.
Mm-hmm,
you know, let's be honest.
Yeah.
A lot of white people feel like they can just go up and touch African-American hair.
Yeah.
Or other races as well. And, you know, that's something that I think is also a piece of education.
Yeah. You know what I want to highlight? I think it's really good here at Boys Girl Haven that we are now getting trained in the whole TRC, because I think that is so, so important nowadays. I will say, previous job, I won't mention any names, I worked in an environment that I had coworkers that would literally come up and just ask so many, like, just kind of almost inappropriate. I don't want to be honest, you know. I want to give example. I will never forget, I was sitting at my desk and I had a coworker who said, hey, Ebony, I didn't even recognize you because, you know, your hair changes so much. Not realizing that was kind of just a little rude.
Yeah.
And you know, and I think back in the day, let's be honest, I probably would have kind of let that slide. And now that I'm realizing, no, that was a great educational piece. And I said to her, hey, I just want to let you know that was kind of a little, you know, a little wrong for you to say that. And, you know, just FYI, our hair is super important.
Yeah.
And yes, you will see me with a lot of different hairstyles. And I just kind of went in a cold conversation, me and her. And I think it was just awesome because she wasn't offended at all.
Mm-hmm.
We were two people that was able to sit down. And I promise you, from that conversation on, she said, you opened my eyes so much. And she was like, now when she saw me, she was like, your hair looks beautiful. You know, like her whole approach changed, and it wasn't a bad thing. And I really appreciate that. So, you know, again, this is, you know, someone who was in the social setting. You would think she probably would have knew that, but I don't think we had conversations like that. So I really enjoy Boys and Girls Haven, who's taking it a little farther to say, no, let us be a little bit more cultural competent. Like, let us figure out what's going on here. So I enjoy that.
Do you feel like that's an experience that a lot of African-American people have, having to kind of explain, you know, kind of what's appropriate, what's inappropriate, educating white people?
It is. And, you know, and I think about it sometimes, a lot of times we get offended by that. You know, our first response, because again, who has to explain just waking up every day, just being who you are, right?
Right.
So we shouldn't have to explain that. But, you know, I actually sometimes I don't mind that, because I feel like just as we all are learning out here, and sometimes it's okay to just have to educate someone. Now, I'm going to be honest, Josh, if I educate you one time and you continue to do it,
right.
You know, I think that's where that privilege kind of continues on. But if, you know, I do that, like I said, in that opportunity, me and that coworker, it became fine after that,
yeah.
You know. And I want to highlight this. I don't think she was saying it to be mean, right?
Yeah.
My hair does change, yeah. Right? But I think, too, sometimes we just have to let people know, no, that's where privilege comes in and how to stop that. So, yeah.
Well, and it just made me think about another point that I think connects to what we're talking about today. You know, talked about like foster adoptive parents reaching out and being proactive. Yeah. But I think that just applies across the board. You know, it seems like there's so much onus put on African-American folks to have to educate us white people. And I think that it really is time for... Caucasian folks to take it upon themselves to educate and learn, to educate themselves to learn, and be proactive in that way. You know, and that would be, I think, again, one of those suggestions if you're caring for a child of a different race is, you know, don't wait for them to educate you or don't wait for somebody to call you out. Like, really try to branch out and educate yourself, you know, be proactive and learn more, not just about hair care, but about culture. And about what that child may truly need to feel warmth, to feel accepted. You know, I think it's kind of a form of white privilege to hang back and expect everybody to just give it to you.
Yeah.
I would suggest go out and learn and make yourself more of a culturally competent parent and citizen. So
where do you feel like the first step is, like, when, you know, adopting or fostering kids from different culture? What do you feel like their first step could be?
Well, I think it starts with education.
Okay.
You know, learn as much as you can. I know with me and my wife, we had both, again, being professionals in this field, we've worked with folks from lots of diverse backgrounds. Okay. And so we kind of had that. And then we really worked to educate ourselves about what children in transracial adoptive homes need. Even with that, though, I will admit that what we weren't prepared for was what that looked like at age 2, at age 5, at age 7, at age 10. And, you know, this is a human being, you know, in our case, two human beings who are growing and maturing and interacting with the world.
Yeah.
And so no matter what we thought we knew, we still had to get better at parenting because our kids are interacting with the world. And unfortunately, you know, you can't divorce race from our kids' experience, you know, and in this country, race kind of colors everything. And so so I think it's always being open to learning more about how kids are affected by issues of race at home, at school, in the community. But also just so that was the first part to answer your question. But then I think ongoing, it's trying to be as attuned as possible to what your kids are going through.
Yeah.
Don't assume that you know, and don't assume it's okay. You know,
okay.
Just because you provide, I've seen this a lot with foster and adoptive parents. The belief is you've got a great home, a roof over your head, you get all the food and amenities that you want, and you get toys on your birthday and Christmas. We have a great home. Well, that may all be true, but that's not the only thing kids need.
Yeah.
And it's not a guarantee of health and well-being, just to provide love, nurturing, and everything that they need. I think you also have to be attuned to what these kids are going through.
Yeah.
And be willing to accept that you don't know everything. So listen to your kids. Pay attention to the nonverbal cues. Pay attention to what's going on in the world around them. And of course, talk to your kids and see how they're doing.
Yeah.
Because they may be going through some things that as a white parent, you're not in tune with because you never had to deal with it.
Yeah.
And I think also just be willing to accept the fact that being in a transracial home can be tough, you know, and so be aware of what kids may be going through and take time to understand that.
Oh, I thought that is awesome. It's so important. Yeah. I really enjoy that. And I think just the way to just do it is just continue to have that open dialogue. That open conversation, open communication with them. I think that's where you will really, really find out what's going on. And I do want to highlight this. Not only I want to just throw this out there, you being Caucasian is learning this as well, but I will say just me just being an African-American female, I'm learning too. Yeah. So recognizing that too. So sometimes kids may not be able to sit down and tell you what's going on because in their head, they're like, I don't know. I'm just different. Or I'm not feeling well. Like, you know, I think sometimes I talk with kids and are like, something's off. And you're like, what is it? You know, you want them to process and talk about it, but realizing they may not be at that point where they're able to articulate that. And it's okay. And it's not because they, you know, are being defiant or they just not wanting to say anything. They may not know. Because we're learning as well, because we are coming back from years of time being told that our hair is not beautiful. Mm. Our hair is not, you know, we can't wear our hair certain ways, right? Think about the army and those things. And so now we're just embracing this. And I'm not talking about 100 years. We're probably only about 10, 20 years in the game, right? Yeah. So we're still learning.
Yeah.
So embracing, just realizing that, I think it's important.
Yeah. And reinforcing that there are many standards of beauty.
Yeah.
And that, you know, having African-American hair and having African-American hairstyles or traditionally African-American hairstyles is beautiful.
Yeah.
I also think, you know, it's representation too. Mm-hmm. You know, don't have a whole playroom full of white Barbie dolls.
Yeah.
You know, I think about the new Little Mermaid movie. You know, with our African-American Ariel.
Yes.
And those toys are flying off the shelf. Mm-hmm. And I think that's wonderful.
Awesome.
Because our children need to see themselves as heroes, but also as beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
So be mindful of that and be mindful of not reinforcing that stereotype of Eurocentric beauty.
Yeah.
You know, really, really try to send the message that they're beautiful just as they are.
Yeah.
And that we're going to support that.
And does it also think, do you think that it also takes the time for you to kind of dig that awareness within yourself and realizing like what your beauty is and that you are beauty too, you know, beautiful in so many different ways as well. And then to be able to help your kid.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. It's, you know, my daughter has come to us, you know, in the past and has said something about wishing she had straight hair or even saying, you know, little Susie at school has straight hair. Why can't I have long straight hair like her?
Yeah.
And having to have that conversation about your hair is different, but your hair is just as beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Or of course we say it's more beautiful. You're the most beautiful girl in the world.
Love it.
But, but yeah, it's, I mean, you have to challenge that
because
our kids are getting that message that their hair is not beautiful. Their hair is not okay.
Yeah.
That, and so we have to, I think we have to really, maybe even kind of more than in African American homes, like really reinforce that the way you look, you're perfect the way you are.
Yeah,
you know, you're handsome, you're beautiful, and let's support you in, you know, enhancing that natural beauty. You know? And part of that is respecting the traditions for hair care and like we've seen a lot in the news about like discrimination because women wore traditionally African hairstyles, like box braids. And things. You know, and that's just examples of that Eurocentric standard of beauty. We've got to go away from that.
Yeah. And I will tell you, I think that that's really good because in the home, I think sometimes the first thing is just acknowledging that, but then also just knowing that it's ongoing. And so creating that positive affirmations with the kids, this daily, ongoing, really getting it in their head that they are beautiful. Like you said, doing things like taking them to the movie to go see The Little Mermaid, you know, taking them, you know, having books in your house, having different types of different culture, music. And I would tell you, culture, like African-American culture is everywhere. So we can kind of implement it in so many different ways, but allowing the kid to see those things, because when they do go out here in the world, I will tell you, they will remember what they've learned. And so I think that that's awesome.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of the Haven Happenings podcast. You can listen to more episodes or learn more by visiting us online at boysandgirlshaven.org.